Hey folks, Eric back with you with Flatbridge Ed. Today's podcast, we're going to talk about DIC, disseminated intravascular coagulation, and as it relates to the trauma patient, and we'll talk specifically in small form regarding sepsis patients as well. And the reason why we're going to go into this is we're going to talk about a new medication that's being utilized in the trauma setting. It's not a new medication in the realm of surgery, cardiothoracic surgery, things like that, and it's called transexamic acid. So for short, we're going to refer to that as TXA. This is a new medication, again, used in the treatment of trauma patients or any patients that have massive bleeding or the potential to have massive transfusion. As it relates to this podcast, we're going to kind of refer to a study that was done in the UK called the CRASH II study, and we'll talk about that here in a second. So I felt like it was fitting to first start in and do a real quick, brief recap on DIC and kind of how that happens and the problems associated with it. So we know DIC happens in the trauma patients. We know this happens in the sepsis patients, and it happens for two reasons. The number one reason is of inflammatory cascades, and we've talked in our earlier podcast regarding ventilator management and things like that, how different aspects of our management causes massive inflammatory cascades that leads to things that attack lung tissues, attack cytokines in the cells, and leads to ARDS and things like that. Well, it's no different in the trauma patient, so or in the sepsis patient. So what happens is you have this consumption or reduction in the coagulation proteins and platelets, and so this starts from ongoing activation of coagulation, and it basically induces severe bleeding. All right, so I sum that up very quickly. What happens, though, is you do have microclots that form throughout this process in the absence of severe clotting factors and depletion of bleeding. So what that means is you still have these small microvascular clots that form throughout the body. But the problem is these start causing problems as well. Trauma patients are at a higher risk for DIC, again, for two reasons. One of the biggest reasons, just like in sepsis, is you have this widespread area of tissue damage. And we know that you have a problem with myoglobin breakdown. Myoglobin is an extremely toxic substance. We know that that leads to rhabdomyolysis. So, you know, that may be another podcast, but that's very toxic, and that causes this massive inflammatory response, your body's way of trying to fix itself. So we see this again in sepsis patients and in multi-organ failure. You also see this at a higher risk in head injury patients, and the reason why is you have this high thromboplastin content of the brain, and you have a proportionally increased ratio of surface area of the head to body surface area. And you see this at a higher incidence also in kids and infants. So, you know, in trauma, we again see this massive inflammatory response because of this injury. And then the other problem is you have this massive bleeding that's going on, so that hypemic hypoxia, and we give massive transfusion. And I don't think if you really look at things objectively and we're humble about it, we haven't done a good job in the past of really understanding this process. And we're just now changing our approach to trauma management as far as permissive hypotension, as far as our fluid resuscitation, utilizing less fluids, maybe picking our fluids a little bit more carefully, utilizing packed red cells, FFP, cryo, and things like that, and not washing out all of our clotting factors by using massive normal saline amounts and things like that. Now, we talked about that in our earlier podcast on fluid resuscitation, so I'm not going to dive into that again. You can refer back to that podcast. But when we do that, when we give a massive transfusion as far as packed red cells, these packed red cells have been sitting in these blood banks for a while. And although they have an expiration date and stuff like that, the clotting factors in these blood products start depleting. So you have a problem when you start giving massive transfusion. And some of these patients get 5 to 10 units of packed red cells. And so you have a problem. You have, again, a washout of these clotting factors that are essential for clotting. And so that's the second part of this whole thing. So the inflammatory cascade, and then you see it in the whole blood, or the packed red cells, I should say. That's why in the military, when we look at military massive transfusion protocols, they're using whole blood, and they're basically grabbing soldiers off the front lines. They have their dog tags that are there at the base, and these, you know, soldiers come in with these massive IED injuries, and they'll just pull these soldiers off, and you've got warm whole blood, and so you still have all these great clotting factors that are in the blood, and you don't have that problem. In the sepsis patient, you see this massive DIC problem as well, because of that surge response that we see in sepsis, and that we've talked about in our earlier podcasts regarding ARDS and things like that. So the clinical condition worsens by secondary fibrolysis, which results in the formation of what's called FDPs, and this is fibrogen or fibrogen degradation products, or D-dimers, and we see the D-dimers obviously when we do labs for pulmonary emboli. This interferes with normal fibrogen formation and platelet function. So this is, I'm summing this up very, I think, elementary. This is a very complex topic, and it's a very fine interwoven mesh of different aspects that our body does to keep everything perfect. So evidence indicates that inflammatory cytokines, when we talk about the inflammatory cascade, plays a central role in DIC in both trauma patients and septic patients. All right. So again, refer back to the resuscitation, fluid resuscitation podcast, and we'll, you know, we talk about how that all works as far as our fluid choice and whole blood, packed red cells, FFP, and things like that. So what's the solution to that? Well, like I said, there's a study that was done a few years back called the CRASH II study. It was done in the UK at Westminster Hospital in UK, and Dr. Tim Coates did this study. And what they did is they looked at a lot of patients. I believe they looked at like 20,000 patients, and they had hospitals all over the world. And it was given to patients that either had the potential for major internal bleeding or potentially would have massive transfusion protocol started on them. So it was kind of up to the clinician, the physician, to start this study or start this protocol. And what they did is they gave the medication tranexamic acid. Now, this medication has been utilized for years in surgery for fibrogenolysis or anti-fibrogenolysis. And it's just recently, again, been utilized in the trauma patient based on this CRASH II study. All right, so when we talk about our trauma patients as it relates to coagulation, the coagulation system is disrupted again by the person's body and causes a breakdown of these coagulation systems. Tranexamic acid, what it does, it inhibits the fibrogenolysis, and it's also a drug that has anti-inflammatory properties to it. So it kind of does things twofold. And I believe reading the study, the fibrogenolysis aspect was the big component, and the anti-inflammatory aspects of it was kind of a secondary thing that they realized of the medication. So tranexamic acid, or TXA, it's not a really powerful drug. It's real subtle in its approach. So it has it basically slows this process down and buys the patient a little bit of time. It's good for two reasons, again. So it's good for two reasons, again. We see the problems with the fibrogenolysis, and we also have the inflammatory cascade that starts in our trauma patients and our sepsis patients. So this medication is excellent. And what they've seen is really the sicker the patient, the better this medication is utilized for. But you can't really, if you really look at things objectively, you can't really identify that. So what they've looked at is you're going to give it to all patients that you suspect has maybe internal bleeding or has the potential to get a unit of blood. And it needs to be given within 3 hours of injury. Because what they've also noticed is that if it's giving after 3 hours of injury, that it actually can cause an increase in mortality. So that's very important. So it's got to be given within 3 hours of injury. What they came away with, any patient that would get 1 liter of Packaret cells or that would have the potential for internal bleeding would get this medication. So it's got to be within 3 hours of onset of injury. This based on the trial, showed a large reduction in mortality and morbidity. And what you do is you give a 1 gram bolus over 10 minutes, and then you give it a continuous infusion over 8 hours. The medication has a big therapeutic window, so the earlier the treatment, the better. Most programs are administering, again, TSX early on. So I believe, and I don't quote me on this, I may be wrong, I believe the LifeNet of New York is doing it within the first hour of injury. It's a very cheap medication. It's shown huge benefits, mortality and morbidity-wise. So I'm real excited. I'm still learning more about it. I'm looking forward to see this in different arenas around the country. And I think that is the big emphasis right now, is going towards looking at our trauma patients, because really, if you look at how we treat our trauma patients, a lot of times our patients die from secondary problems, and that's the same for sepsis. They die from massive surge response, ARDS, rhabdo, things like that. So we manage our initial problems very well, but the secondary things, or the how we treat those primary things, cause secondary issues that lead to death. So I think the big emphasis right now is looking at massive transfusion protocols, looking at this TXA, and really there's no contraindications to this medication. It's excellent. It's just shown major benefit, mortality and morbidity-wise. And I'm real excited to see how it progresses in the industry and how it can benefit our patients. So really, what are we talking about mortality and morbidity-wise as far as improvement goes? Well, I've seen scores from about 2% up to 8%. So even though that's not a massive increase, it's still an increase. And I think if we look at this a little bit closer and we give this medication earlier on, we're going to see an improvement mortality and morbidity-wise. Pretty exciting stuff. If you're so inclined, I encourage you to look this up on the internet, read more about it. I think that you're going to start seeing this more in the protocols throughout your area, the country. I know they're doing this in Europe, overseas, in different areas as well. So this isn't a new thing. It's, again, in the last year and a half. But we are going to start seeing this more and more. So that's all I have. Thanks again for everybody for supporting Flatbridge Ed. We really would like to hear your comments. Please shoot us an email. You can email me, eric@flatbridgeed.com. And if you have any specific topics that you want to hear about podcast-wise, I would love to research those and present those. So thanks again for supporting us, and we'll talk to you soon.